And we return 6 minutes past 1 o'clock. It's today's Topical Currents. Joseph Cooper starting yet another week on our program. Disgruntled condominium owners and members of homeowner associations are nothing new. Some residents think of the governing boards as a dictatorship. Others are glad to have people who want to better their property and maintain the best market value. Governor Bush is set to sign a board reform bill, but it was greatly amended by the legislature last session. Joining me now is State Representative Julio Robina, who is the sponsor of a House bill, which was amended by the legislature. Welcome to you, Mr. Representative.
Thank you, Joseph, for the opportunity to be here this afternoon.
And also joining me is Gary Polyakov, an attorney who specializes in condo board and homeowners associations. He's a founder of the firm of Becker and Polyakov, who've represented thousands of boards over the past year. Welcome to you, Gary Polyakov.
Glad to be here.
Representative, let's start with you. What's the most frequent complaint you ran into when you canvassed the state with the House committee, finding out what complaints there were from condo and homeowners associations?
The number one complaint was the abuse of powers by these boards that were elected by these people to represent their best interests, and they basically went astray. And when I say abuse of powers, from everything not allowing people to speak, not giving people chance to see the records, doing whatever they wanted, even circumventing the election process, you name it, it was, again, the abuse of power by these boards that were empowered to look over these associations.
Now, was this a small number of the thousands of associations that we have in Florida?
Absolutely not. And there'll be a lot of people that'll make you think that it is a small number of people. What it is, it's actually, if you take the percentages of those that have either had problems or are now currently having problems, the percentages are high, even though, again, people will make you to believe that it's a small percentage. The problem is basic, and I've said it before. There are good laws, and there are some laws that I consider that do need to be amended and tweaked, as we said, but it all falls upon what happens when these board members abuse of the power and what happens when they don't allow people to become part of the process and basically take control, creating what we call their own little countries or communities with their own laws and basically circumvent everyone from having a say.
Joseph, if I may, it's on that point perhaps that I have a disagreement with Representative Robina. That is that the committee met with a relatively small number of disgruntled owner out of what are millions, over a million condominium owners in the state, and the vast majority of condominium owners in this state are not only happy, they're pleased with the job that their volunteer boards are doing, and let's never lose sight of the fact that the members of the boards are unit owners, the same as the other unit owners. And I don't honestly believe that the comments made were representative of the vast majority of owners. And while there are occasionally abuses that do take place, I don't think the response is to throw out the baby with the bathwater. We have some good laws on the books. We have a lot of consumer protection for condominium owners. And from my perspective, what we need to do is enforce the laws on the books as opposed to imposing new laws that are going to discourage quality people from running from the boards.
Now, the representative authored a bill, and you were instrumental, you and your firm were instrumental in changing it quite a bit and, according to some people, really watering it down.
Correct.
Why?
Well, quite frankly, because it was bad legislation, and I don't put the full fault on the way the legislation was drafted on Representative Robina. I think members of the legislative staff did somewhat of a disservice to him. This is very complex law, and the way that some of these provisions were written would have had a dramatic negative impact on the operations of condominium. For example, there was one proposal that would have limited those who could serve on the board to individuals who were not related in any degree. Condominium is a form of property ownership. There are a lot of condominiums in the state that consist of no more than 2 units, 4 or 6 units, which are owned nearly exclusively by families. And to pass a law saying that if you're related, you cannot serve on the board, obviously runs contrary to the best interests of those types of communities. I could give many other examples, but that just...
Why don't we start with getting a little more specific, is have the representative talk about the original form of this bill, and then I'll let you, Mr. Polyakov,
thank you.
Tell us why you specifically were opposed to it.
And Joseph, you will, again, hear completely contradictory points of view here. But, you know, what we did simply is government listened to its constituents. When we had our meetings, and I understand Gary's comments that it wasn't a majority, but you got to understand, due to apathy and due to years of these problems, that's why a lot more people did not come out to these hearings. But we had hearings that were attended by several hundred people at a time in any given community. So moving on to your question, what happens? The biggest problem is that what we did in these hearings that we had, we simply went out and took notes, myself and the committee, and we listened to what people said were the atrocities happening in these associations. We weren't there to give opinions. We weren't there to tell them what we were going to do. We went there to listen. And that's what these hearings were all about. Me and my members sat there and took down just hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of comments of horror stories that were happening, abuse of powers, as I said earlier. It was coming from these associations. And what we did simply, so that everybody will know what my legislation or my report to the speaker and the governor consisted of, was nothing more than a report that stated what the top 25 complaints were that were common around the state of Florida. And I got to tell you, I could have turned in 200, you know, suggestions for reform because of these different complaints that we have. But this is what was sent forward. We did not actually invent anything. This came as a result of hearing these repetitive complaints from people throughout the state of Florida.
What I generally have found, and found this in speaking with Representative Rabana, and he shared with me some of these complaints before the session began. And I pointed out that there are a number of solutions already in the act to address these problems. So that what we really need to be doing is educating condominium owners and their boards as to their rights and their responsibility. In many of these areas, we don't really need a lot of new laws. What we need to do is enforce the laws that are already on the books. I would like to comment that I do commend Representative Rabana for taking the time to travel around the state to try to get input from the condominium owners, because obviously condominium has a major economic impact in this state. There is, as I indicated, there are over a million condominium unit owners. There's an additional several million people who live in homeowner association regulated communities. It's a multi-billion dollar industry, and we want to make sure, for the benefit of all the interests, both the boards, the unit owners, the developers, the lenders, that the concept works and is successful. But sure. Sometimes you can get into a degree of overregulation, which then becomes the golden goose.
But Joseph, on that same note, this is one of the things that intrigues us. Part of my recommendations was mandatory training for all newly elected board members, and they oppose that also. So if you really want these people to understand what laws are and act properly, why would you go against mandatory training of these board members? That's like us as elected officials being sent off to Tallahassee or Washington and not knowing anything of Robert's Rules of Order, how to conduct ourselves in meetings, not giving us any type of training. So I don't understand. And
I could see a huge development like Century Village or something like that, where it's really a big, almost a full-time job, but a small four-unit, mm-hmm. people would have to be trained?
Well, what they need is they need to understand how these meetings are held. They need to understand what their responsibilities are. Because, you know, there is a responsibility. And with all due respect, we love and we continue to encourage people to volunteer to be members of these boards. But along with that,
it can
commitment.
Be a very thankless job.
Exactly. It sure is. But there's also responsibilities that you take on. There's a fiduciary responsibility, and there's other issues there that they need to take into
consideration.
Our concern
wasn't with the training. Our concern was with the word mandatory. Who's going to police this? Who's going to come up with the program? Who's going to pay for it? There are over 10,000 condominium associations in the state. They average about 5 persons each. That's over 50,000 individuals serving on the boards. They change over at a relatively rapid rate during the year. So you can estimate there may be as many as 75,000 individuals serving on those boards.
I suppose some people get a taste of it and say, this isn't for me.
That happens to be true. Of course, some people move out of the community. Some people find that it's intolerable serving on the board because they are subject to a lot of abuses from unit owners who really don't understand that the boards are volunteers.
And on another note, though, the money was there for the training. These people pay $4. Everybody that lives in a condominium condominium basically pays $4 to the state of Florida that goes into a trust fund. So the money is there, and we call it mandatory because we do
want... What's it used for now?
To be very honest with you, and Gary will agree with me, the state has been basically neglecting what that money should have been used for. For years, the legislature has been using the money, what they call a sweep. They've swept it out of that account and thrown it into general revenue and used it for everything but what is intended for. What we did this year, we were able to stop the sweep of the funds, and the money this year is going into paying for the Office of the Ombudsman, and the proposal was to pay at no extra cost to these unit owners for that became board members, training for them also.
Our telephone number, if you'd like to join in, you're certainly welcome. That number, 1-800-743-WLRN. That's 1-800-743-WLRN. Also, email is an option. That address is radio@wlrn.org, radio@wlrn.org. Gary Polyakov, what about the criminal check of potential owners and renters? Is that something that you don't want to see?
Yep. Well, it was kind of ridiculous to require every person who is elected to the board to go through a criminal law background check. Again, as you yourself point out, a number of these communities are relatively small. We like to think of condominium in the Century Village, the Hollybrook.
I was talking about potential owners and renters, not the board members. But you're against having the board members have a criminal background?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. It was a waste of time and money. And my point I was trying to get to is that most of these individuals are well known within their communities. They've been there for a long period of time, and there's nothing advantageous to spending $150 to $200 to do a criminal law background to see if a person qualifies for the board. We didn't even do that for people who were elected to the state legislature.
What if somebody's been convicted of fraud or swindles?
Exactly.
Well, let me answer that question. We have a provision in the law that requires any person who controls directly or indirectly the disbursement of association funds to be bonded. As part of that bonding process, there is a criminal law background inquiry. But there are other individuals who might serve on the board of directors, and it would be totally a waste of association resources.
Joseph, if I may jump in now, he's absolutely correct. But in the real world, the practical world, we have found as we went through with our hearings that there were people with criminal backgrounds serving on these boards because as volunteers, they never took the time out to spend only $14 to $20 with FDLE to run a background check on people. So we don't understand something as what I consider to be common sense to check these people was never, ever supported by groups like Gary Polyakov.
Could there be a threshold of budget size? What if it's a budget of above X amount of dollars, then you have to have a criminal background check? But if it's the smaller guys,
well,
you wouldn't have to do it.
Let me divide this because I went off on the tangent. You originally said you asked about individuals moving into communities. It's fairly commonplace for communities to screen applicants to purchase or lease. And they do, as part of that, criminal law backgrounds. So in many cases, these investigative inquiries are made before a person ever qualifies to run for the board. But again, I don't think, I mean, we're talking about over the course, condominiums were created in the state in 1963. If we estimate that there's over 50,000 people a year who serve on boards, that's, what is that? That's well over 2 million people have served on the boards, and the incidences of problems are so inconsequential that, quite frankly, it's a waste of the resources. I do want to hasten to add one thing. We do have a law in the books that say that no person who is a convicted felon whose right to vote has not been restored can serve on the board. In other words, you cannot serve on the board of a condominium in the state of Florida if you're a convicted felon whose rights have not been restored.
And let me touch base on that. That currently exists, but again, it's being circumvented because people are not challenging these boards and it's not happening. We wanted to make it a more of a mandatory issue where if you're on that board, everybody, just the same way you have the right to know what candidate you're voting for if you're voting in an election process, whether those candidates have been, you know, arrested, if they have any priors, the same thing. And why, Joseph, is it important? Because these people will have a fiduciary responsibility. They will deal with your dollars and cents. Do you want somebody who has a felony or misdemeanor handling the books in your community? I do not. And that was the word from people all over the state of Florida. And that was one of the ones that, again, we were surprised that they challenged that and tried to remove that, because that was an outcry of people calling, saying, let's do something to screen those bad apples out of these associations.
Now, of your original bill that you authored, what was passed, what's been saved that is still positive?
Well, one of the most important part of the bill that I continued to push, and it did make it through, is the creation of the Ombudsman's Office. And basically, the Ombudsman is an individual that will be appointed by the governor that will work as a neutral party, does not belong to the department, does not belong or have any responsibility to anybody. He'll have the opportunity to come out. If six people in an association feel that there is a problem, this individual can be sent out. He can has a number of responsibilities. He can monitor elections. He can inform people of what their issues are. He will review whatever processes are in place. He can request records, which is another big problem. A lot of people in associations want to see receipts, want to see where their money's being spent, and they can't get that information. The Ombudsman can come out and work with these individuals and try to pursue it. But more importantly, one of the things that I'm really honored in having this Ombudsman's Office come into reality, pending the governor's signature, is that for the first time, Joseph, we're going to have somebody that can work with the state attorney's office, because never in the history of the state of Florida has anybody been arrested and convicted for fraud and taking money from associations. Now you're going to have someone that's going to be able to listen, come on site, and listen to the unit owners when they're complaining about things that are going on in these associations.
I have an emailer here. This is Mark. He says, in over 20 years of managing associations, no insurance company has ever asked for a background check on any board member.
Well, again, it would be very difficult, in my opinion, to get the bonding required by statute without the inquiry. So if a insurance company is being derelict in their responsibility, again, that's not something you're going to be able to address with the law. I would like to address the ombudsman for a second. In 1990, I served as a member of the State of Florida Condominium Study Commission, which actually created, by recommendation, the first ombudsman office and also the advisory council.
Which, I've heard that you pretty much wrote the laws.
He has.
Well, I've had the privilege to have had my
I'm not saying there's anything wrong with
that. No, on a lot of what has transpired, primarily because this is my field of practice. I teach as an adjunct law professor. I wrote the national treaty on the subject, and I practice in this field for over 32 years. It's an area which I love, and I think I understand.
But Joseph, can I interrupt just real quick? And I want him to talk about his opinion on the ombudsman. See, but that's one of the issues that I've had a problem with. This is a man, I'm not nothing personal against him, but he wrote the laws. The state of Florida, and he's been making a living from these laws for a number of years.
Representing the associations.
Representing the associations. I'm not stating that there's any improprieties. That's what America is based on. But to write the laws and to make a living off of them automatically just basically sends a message out there. Of course you're going to be defensive and protective of those laws that you wrote when people are trying to tell you it's time to review these things and create some
changes.
Well,
I respectfully disagree with that comment, and I make no apologies with how I make my living. Back in 1972, when I opened up my office to practice law, condominium owners had no right to control, to serve on or control the boards of their association. They were condominiums. The rule was you were subjected to 99-year leases, and the management was in the hands of the developer. The entirety of my practice for the first 15 years of practice was representing condominium consumers. We had something to do with writing the laws to ensure the fact that every condominium owner would have a right to qualify to serve on the board, to have right to access to the books and records, a right to be given financial reports, the right to be protected from poor quality of construction, to be able to hold developers accountable. So to suggest that our livelihood has been totally dependent upon representing associations is just absolutely not correct. The practice has been a consumerist practice designed to protect the condominium concept, and I think the success of the concept is self-evident. But I do want to get back, if I may, for a second to the ombudsman office. What I'm concerned about is, and that's why I wanted to point out, that I, as a member of the State Study Commission, and I served as the first chair of the State Advisory Board, both the Ombudsman and the Advisory Council were repealed by the Florida legislature because the cost of funding of those agencies was so great it was diluting the resources that were being made available to the Division of Florida Land Sales and Condominium. The division is funded by condominium owners because we had something to do with setting up the division and also ensuring that funding would come from the unit owners. But, and I agree, this is one area where I totally concur with Representative Urbana. The monies of the unit owners have not been, I think, appropriately spent for the purpose of the division, which is education, enforcement, and regulation.
Okay, we've got some agreements. Now let's take a little break and take some calls. Missy in Fort Lauderdale, thanks for your patience. Hi.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. Gentlemen, I have a question. My husband and I live in a homeowners association in Boca Raton, and we too experienced some problems where there was damage being done by contracted workers to our home. We had asked our management company for copies of the contracts of the management company and also of the contractor who was doing the damage so we can see who we go about to resolve this problem. Our situation started when the management company refused repetitively to turn over the information we requested. The board of directors not only refused the information but instructed the management company not to give it to us. Mm-hmm. So as a result, after over a year of requesting this, we filed a complaint to the Department of Business and Professional Regulation.
Correct.
As a result of that, our board of directors, attorney for the association, in addition to the board of directors, sent us letters of extortion saying that if we didn't meet their demands, one of the demands being telling the state to retract their investigation, it would cost us a lot of money. And if we don't pay the money, that we were going to lose our house.
If I may comment on that, Joseph, again, classic example of what happens within these associations. And by the way, I'll let Gary comment on what some of your possibilities are, because I have my comments also. But I just want to bring it up to everyone listening in that there's a classic example of what happens in the intimidation, a lot of times by attorneys, which in many cases have given these boards the okay to go ahead and do things. And all of a sudden, when the state is informed, then, and the letter comes back, which states to that board and that attorney that they're acting incorrectly, of course, then the process of intimidation. Because let me tell you why they're intimidating you. And what happens in the real world is that simply they will tell the other unit owners in your location that if there is a fine placed among them, it comes out of the pockets of your unit. So they try to target your own unit owners or your neighbors against you to try to get you to back off these complaints. Isn't that what you have going right now?
Well, no, they went after us personally. This is homeowners. This isn't a condo.
That's a homeowner association.
Uh-huh.
But they're letting the people in there know that if the state doesn't back off, it'll be because of what you started, a complaint that you filed.
No, actually what they did was they created a rule for my husband and I to pass any cost they wanted to my husband and
Even
I.
Even worse.
Any cost they want. I have paid for lawyers' dinners. We have paid for board meetings. We've paid for the president's personal legal fees.
There we go.
And we have paid thousands and thousands of dollars just for the sole purpose to protect our real property. We haven't hired a lawyer at this time because lawyers, honestly, are not pro-homeowner. They're more pro-association, unfortunately, what I'm finding.
Well, let me answer the question, and then we'll let Gary answer. My thing is that, you know, you have the right to see all these records. This is public records, and you have the right to request these records. Unfortunately, the lawyers work for the associations. You pay for it, but they work for the association. And unfortunately, if you're going to enter into a legal challenge, as you know, you're going to go out and have to hire another attorney, which you're also going to have to pay for in order to battle the situation. But, Gary,
what state agency you filed your complaint with.
Department of Business and Professional
Regulation. You see, the Department of Business and Professional Regulation does not have jurisdictional authority over homeowner associations, and quite frankly,
who does?
No one. And I have been an advocate for over 25 years for the department to regulate homeowner associations. I personally see no distinction between common ownership housing, between cooperatives, condominiums, and homeowner associations, and quite frankly have fought for years against the developer lobby, which has really been the key peg that has precluded those associations from being put under the jurisdiction of the division. However, I want to let you know that Representative Urbana and the legislature did make some sweeping reforms to the HOA law this year, and the Department of Business and Regulations was given the jurisdiction for arbitrating disputes between homeowners and their boards. And that law will become effective October the 1st of this year. And they have also provided that a fine that is levied against you by your board cannot become a lien against the property so that it cannot be foreclosed.
Correct.
So there really are what we're doing is trying to bring the homeowners under the spectrum of similar protections that are afforded to condominium owners, and we've gone a long way this year of doing that. We've also changed the definition of what the official records of a homeowner association is to make it all expansive. So in the past, your boards might have been able to deny you access to certain books and records, saying it's not one of those specifically referenced documents in the statute, but that's changed now. And as of effective October the 1st, you will have the authority to look at all of the records of the association. I would totally support, and perhaps Representative Rabana can continue to work towards this, bringing the entirety of homeowner associations under the regulation of the division.
Thank you.
I appreciate that, sir. My concern is this. I've found in the last year and a half that the management companies hide behind the board of directors and vice versa, and mainly because for HOAs, there's not much regulation until, you know, thank goodness, in October. My concern is this. We have, and maybe you can answer because you've been with homeowners associations and boards much longer than I have. My question would be is why would a board of directors fight very hard to protect a management company when they have a fiduciary duty to the homeowner?
That's a great question.
I would have no idea why they would do so. Quite frankly, the management company should be serving as an agent of the members, and the board, as you correctly note, is a fiduciary of the owners. And however, I hasten to add this. You have the ultimate authority in the hands of your homeowners. Any member of the board in a condominium, a cooperative, a homeowner association can be removed with or without cause at any time by a majority of your owners. So if you don't like the job that the board's doing, you ought to exercise that privilege that is granted to you, remove the board, and put people in who are more responsive to the needs of your members.
Joseph, if I may.
Missy, I have a lot of other calls.
Okay, thank you very much.
Let me end with these comments to Missy's ordeal, I should say. And I have a different answer, of course, from Gary's. And simply, why is there such support for the board and not so much, you notice, because there's friendships that are developed within time between these management companies and these board members. And with all due respect to the process, yes, every unit owner has the last say if they want to recall those boards. But even the process of trying to recall these boards nowadays, it's almost impossible. One of the things I tried to propose was 2-year term limits with a chance to continue to serve at the approval of the unit owner. So we weren't really telling them you can only serve 2 years and you're gone. We're telling you serve 2 years. If no one else runs and you're doing a good job, by support of the rest of the unit owners, you can serve again. They went ahead and again derailed that part of my legislation. And last thing I will tell you, these abuses are happening all the time. I have cases where there's been foreclosures on units for people that have owed less than $10 in the state of Florida. And last but not least, you have fines levied at $75 to $100, followed by an attorney's, what we call a form letter, which can cost as much as $250. Missy, your abuses are heard. We keep hearing them over and over again, and I will continue to work to try to change the legislation to deal with that.
Have there been foreclosures over such small
Absolutely.
Fines?
Well, I don't know personally of foreclosures. First of all, on fines, the answer is no. The Condominium Act specifically prohibits a lien being placed for fine and foreclosing of that lien. And as I've just indicated, the HOA law has been amended to conform it to the Condo Act,
Correct.
Which would preclude placing liens against units for fines. But what we lose sight of is that in a common ownership housing community, every unit owner is responsible for paying their pro rata share of the common expenses, regardless of how high those expenses are.
And he may get some deadbeats.
And if you don't pay it, it doesn't mean that the obligations go away. If the association has entered into contracts for their landscape maintenance, their pool maintenance, their insurance, their security, those companies are not going to continue to provide the services just because a handful of owners aren't willing to pay their pro rata share.
And by the way, those laws have not been challenged. Those have been left alone because we understand that that's a necessity that these associations have in order to be able to collect on what they would consider to be deadbeat tenants or deadbeat
okay,
owners.
Okay, let's go back to the phones. I have Joe in Miami Lakes. Hey there. Joe, you're up. Joe once, twice. Eddie in Hialeah Gardens. Hi.
Hi. Hi, Joseph, thanks for having me. I, in all support of Mr. Polikoff and Peter Dunbar, who is also a gentleman who composed these statutes, I'm one person that I'd have to say that I have testimony that they do not work. I mean, the creation with its true intent of protecting homeowners and protecting people that live in condo associations, that may have been out there, but it's a fallacy. It is not working, and Mr. Polyakov and Mr. Dunbar exactly know why they're not working. I, for example, I live in a condominium where we found out that after 3 years of complaining to the DVPR, to the state attorney, to the police department, because our unit board members were stealing money, let's put it bluntly, we found out that we have to pay these penalties, because at the end, when these investigative agencies investigate, we end up paying these fines. So this was a major issue, and I came out. Actually, our community was out all over the newspapers. We were all over the media. And now I'm constantly being contacted by other people, some of which are clients of Mr. Polyakov's office themselves. And I just wanted to say something. This last legislation, all they did was just dispute and challenge these issues without actually coming up with solutions. Mm-hmm. For example, why didn't they argue how to exclude the smaller condominiums? There was no issue about that. Mr. Polikoff never once intended to argue the point that we should exclude small condos from this statute. Let me give you an example. Mr. Polikoff, you could go ahead and comment on this. There was an issue about the ombudsman having access to the condominium documents. Well, in small condos, those documents may be kept inside of a shoebox. Mm-hmm. However, there was no intent in saying, what should unit owners do to go to that person's closet, pull out the shoebox, and inspect the records? These are associations are governed by the state of Florida. They are corporations. If an association can't afford $40 to get a storage bin somewhere to put those documents, I don't believe they should be governed by the state. These are all corporations that are supposed to be complying with statutes. Now, again, Mr. Polikoff made no intention on arguing the point that these are small condos that have shoeboxes.
Well, one area, if I may, which I respectfully disagree with you, is I don't think that one homeowner or one condominium is less or more important than another. I think the law should apply equally across the board to provide full protection for every individual in this state who buys into a form of common ownership housing. I adamantly disagree with the original format of the Ombudsman Office. I certainly can live with the version that is part of the existing bill, and what I was opposed to is that it gave, and I'm not being exaggerating in this point, it gave a McCarthyism type of powers upon an agent of the state without affording anyone the rights of protection of the Constitution of the United States, due process, equal protection, to appear on the doorsteps of a condominium, to go into the office of the association, to seize the records of the association. Any civil libertarian would have been adamantly opposed to that proposal as it was originally offered.
Okay. Let me comment as to the due process. Now, we know that there is no such thing as due process in a condo, Mr. Polyakov. Mm-hmm. Let me give you an example. For example, you were talking about the unit owner that could go and ask for these documents. Well, Section 718.501 of the Florida statutes indicates that the DVPR does have that enforcement power. You were saying earlier how they got that enforcement power for HOAs. They've had it for condos all along. Mm-hmm. Now, I say it's a fallacy because unit owners, for example, are not entitled to due process. You said that the only way that these liens could be placed on unit owners' properties were if they were delinquent on their dues. Well, that's not exactly true. The unit associations, they can impose fines on unit owners and take them to court, except they're called legal fees. Mm-hmm. And this is an example. A unit owner has a problem. They go to their board. The board gets their attorneys to write them a nasty letter and charge $300 for that nasty letter. Now, how is that due process when they have to pay $300 for receipt of that letter?
Well, they're not allowed to impose fines without the word due process means that you have a notice of an alleged violation, you have an opportunity for hearing, and the statute defines who that hearing is before. In the case of a homeowner association, it expressly has to be other members of the association, and it excludes certain members of the boards and the offices of the corporation. And condominium is less clear, but the hearing is before unit owners of the association. So no one can impose a fine unless you've had an opportunity for hearing.
Mr. Polyakov, I get calls from people that your association, that your firm is representing, and they're fined. There are letters that are sent to them, and unit owners are being billed for those letters.
Mm-hmm. Well, the law is clear as to what is required. If someone is violating the law, then there's remedies for those violations.
Where would you go if there are remedies for those associations? Where would you send someone to go to?
I would tell them to go to the Department of Business and Professional Regulations if they're a condominium.
There. I've been to the State Attorney's Office. I've been to the Department of Insurance. I've been to the Police Department. There is not a single person in the state of Florida that has ever been trialed, incriminated, penalized, or fined for any violations of Chapter 718. Isn't that correct, sir?
Well, that's an absolute falsehood.
Well,
there are
fines.
The Division of Florida Land Sales and Condominiums has a schedule that lists every conceivable violation of the law that may take place, including the fines that would be levied for the violations of sections. They levy fines on a regular basis. And contrary to what I heard before, I know of a number of incidents where I know of a number of instances where individual members of the boards, including management companies, have been criminally prosecuted and have civilly been prosecuted for misappropriation of the monies of an association.
So
there are adequate remedies in the law. It's just a case of using them.
Well, let me jump in there in defense to the gentleman, the caller that's on the line right now. I will tell you that he's absolutely right. Gary, I have asked the state attorney's office to show me where criminally they've been prosecuted, and they cannot offer me any type of documentation. What has happened, it's turned to be civilly civilly handled, because that's what happens in most of these cases. And this is why we keep saying that we need to change some of these statutes. And I have a question for you when I get done, because what these cases end up, since the state attorney's office can't really do anything, they keep telling us, representative, there's not much we can do. This ends up in a civil matter, in a court, a civil issue between these unit owners and the boards being represented by attorneys that they're paying for already in the form of their fees, and then they have to go out and hire other legal representation to represent them against the board. So I will challenge you on that, and as a matter of fact, I have a meeting with the state attorney's office on Friday asking them to show me where there's ever been somebody prosecuted.
Well, if they don't prosecute, it's not because they don't have the right.
It's because
our system is overtaxed.
You know,
and it's a question of where they're going to put their priorities.
But you know, the thing is, what they tell us simply is that it's because we need to make sure that there's teeth in the laws, and we need to correct these laws and tweak them so that they can go in and do their job. That is what they're telling us, and that's what they tell me as a representative. And my question to you, Gary, is do you think that there's any changes that need to be done to current laws with condo or homeowner?
Well, I never would use the word there are no changes that need to be to the law. We made some sweeping reforms to the laws this year, both in the HOA setting and even in the condo setting.
Would you term that sweeping, Representative?
I would call it not sweeping. I tried to create some massive sweeping reform, and due to the machinery that law firms, and with due respect to Gary, but the law firms like Gary Polyakov's law firm and other law firms that spent a lot of money and lobbied my peers up there and started that email campaign and stealing, they were basically scaring these people, telling people to email their legislators to vote down this sweeping reform because it was going to cost them hundreds of dollars. This is the kind of stuff that we have to put up with in Tallahassee. I'm not pointing fingers, but I think the public is speaking clearly that we do need sweeping reforms. What we got this year was nothing more than maybe a foot in the door. That's what I would say we got this year. We did not get sweeping
Representative
reforms.
Robano, you demean the intelligence of those volunteers on boards if you say that they are intimidated to send letters to their state legislators.
No.
These are highly intelligent individuals, many of whom are leaders of their industry.
It's not you incorrectly heard me. It's not that the board members are intimidated. They sent emails to their legislators intimidating the legislators to vote against my proposed sweeps because they told them, I put you in office. You better not vote for any of these recommendations that Representative Rubin is putting in. Remember, you must come home. And when we started, we were puzzled. We started calling back these people that started emailing us, and we were asking them, why would you send emails to the legislators asking them to vote against something we're trying to do to protect you. You know what most of them said? Well, we were told by our law firms to call. A lot of them didn't know what they were calling about. A lot of them sent formatted emails to us saying to vote this down. And the biggest one, when I had my staff start calling and they asked them, why would you send in something like this saying to vote against this when we're trying to help you out? As well, we were told by the law firms that it was going to cost us hundreds of extra dollars in fees. That is the machinery and the tax.
This law firm never made such a statement. You cannot provide any evidence that that type of statement was ever made.
And Gary, again, we understand. It's nothing personal. I'm just telling you, I'm stating fact here today, what we had to deal with in Tallahassee this year.
What we shared with thousands and thousands of community associations across the state, where it was an exact, unaltered statement of the bill that you introduced, what impact it would have upon their associations, and we let them make their own assessment as to what impact it would have and whether it was something that was positive or negative to their community.
But with all due respect, sir, a lot of those letters that you sent were to associations that you represent, you bill, you make money from, you make a living from. And you were telling them to vote against legislation, which at the end of the day, unless you think that I'm against the public, I was trying to defend those unit owners and make their lives a little easier.
I think they made their decisions based upon the facts, and the truth of the matter is that the legislation that was proposed would have been extremely harmful to the welfare of the entirety of the condominium concept.
And we will disagree on that.
And perhaps there are areas that we need to address. And you and I, and I've invited this, and you've been very gracious in saying that we'll sit down and talk. And if there are abuses that are not addressed in the law, I can assure you that I will work closely with you in trying to address those abuses.
Okay. Let's go back to our phone calls. I have a caller here who says he's a board member of Condo Association. Dennis in Miami. Hi.
Yes. Hi, Joseph.
Hi.
I'd like to thank you for the show. It's a great topic, especially since in South Florida we must have more condos per capita than any other area in the world, probably.
Well, it's our pleasure.
Listen, I've been on my board's condo association for many years as treasurer and president in the recent past, and I've left service with a real degree of bitterness after witnessing many coups and overthrows of officers without following Florida law.
There you go.
Not only is it a thankless job, as you often hear, but you can have many board members who will not even show up. They'll stonewall meetings by not attending without a quorum. You can't have the meeting, and then your business can't be conducted. It's also difficult to get people to even run every year, and oftentimes this leads to carryover boards from one year to the next without getting reelected. I'd like to ask your guest opinion on two things. Mm-hmm. How about including, by way of Florida statute, a provision for condominium associations to pay a per-meeting salary or fee for board members who actually show up and conduct the business? And number two, since it's already been touched upon, how about requiring a mandatory state training program at a minimum just to cover Florida statutes, sunshine laws, and Robert's Rules of Order?
Let me comment quickly on this. As I said, I tried to create the mandatory training process in my legislation, which again was derailed. But why did I do it? First of all, because you have money in the current trust fund that it wouldn't have cost anything. We wanted you to know what you're doing when you get elected to these boards. I'm going to bring that back up again this year and push it again.
I hope you will.
I sure will. And second of all, on your second issue, as far as these boards and so forth, I mean, I tell you what, let me have Gary comment to it and then I'll respond.
Well, first on the mandatory training, again, I am not opposed. In fact, fully support the concept of educational programming by the division. The reason I am opposed to the concept of mandatory training is there's no testing level to ascertain whether or not a person would meet certain qualifications to serve on a board. And I think it would be put into serious question the actions taken by the board if, in fact, those criteria could not be ascertainable. Quite frankly, I forgot the second part of the question.
Paying board members.
There's nothing in the Florida law that precludes you from paying board members. It says that officers and directors can serve without compensation unless otherwise provided by your documents.
Right, but if you agree that most associations are limited and are really strapped for funds, and you know, you can't really acquire very much professional conducting people to serve on boards, much less who have even any experience to do so.
Well, that's just the area where I respectfully disagree, because maybe it's I just look at a much larger spectrum of the marketplace totally across the state. You're correct. Florida, 50% of all condominiums are situated in three states, Florida, Texas, and California. That's across the entirety of the United States. So it is very important to the economy of Florida. It's an important housing format. But I know Representative Rabana might not agree with this, but it's my opinion that over 90% of the condominiums in the state not only are very professionally and successfully operated, they're done so with total satisfaction on the part of the unit owners and their boards.
You're probably right. I just haven't served on one yet, but I appreciate your support and everything that you're doing through the House. And, Joseph, thanks again for a great topic. Thanks a lot.
My pleasure. We have a lot of people on the board who've been waiting for a long time. I'm not going to be able to get to all, but we'll go to work with Ellen in Miami. Hi.
Hi. Oh, this is a wonderful, wonderful show, and I would like the attorney to come to Bayshore Yacht and Tennis Club tonight at a board meeting where the board has sneakingly gone behind the unit owner's back to borrow $1.2 million from Kislak Bank. Now, who, Mr. Senator Rubino, you know Bayshore Yacht and Tennis Club very well, don't you?
Very well, and I tell you, thank you again for calling in. I would also challenge Gary Poilakoff to come out there and speak to him, as long as you guys promise not to boo him, okay?
I promise.
Good, but
to
give him a chance to come out there.
I am a 54-year-old woman that has recently been forced into selling my condominium that I worked long and hard to achieve the money to be able to own a home in America, to have the American dream, and that was to own a home, until I got involved with the condominium mafia. And I could not justify giving these people one more dollar of my money, and I've been forced into selling my home. There is so much corruption, illegal activity. For this gentleman to sit there and say everything is all the unit owners are happy in America, that is not true.
No, I
have tried very hard to make a difference.
No, I try to put in perspective. I said 90%, and I genuinely believe that. That doesn't mean that everything is perfect in condo land.
Well, I'm a former condo manager. All my best friends are condo managers. I've been in the condominium world for many, many years, and I disagree. I think it's the reverse. I think 90% of the people that have the American dream are bewitched, bothered, and bewildered.
And let me just add for
and
the
I'd
record.
Like to go to the state's attorney's office with you, Mr. Rubino, on Friday.
Thank you. Well, I tell you what, the state attorney's office is getting bombarded with phone calls because people are really, really
hoping.
I've been
hoping. There, done that. I've done
everything.
And
you probably got the same response, that they really can't get involved. It's a civil matter. So, again, I deal in the real world. I don't live in a bubble where, you know, laws are laws. But, again, we have all kinds of laws. There's a law that says you shouldn't murder somebody. Mm-hmm. And we still do it. The bottom line is, this is the reality that I live in every day, the horror stories that I hear. And quoting Mr. Poilakoff, maybe 90%, if he claims that 90% of the units in the state are fine, but that's only at this present moment. If that's just a matter of time before a new board gets in and everything goes astray. And that's the problems that we're having.
It's frightening what's happening at Bayshore Yacht and Tennis Club. I mean, there is Timberlake Management. There is the board. Everybody is in with everybody.
Correct.
And, I mean, and horror stories.
Those are the boards that have the conflicts where you have family members serving, you know, on the board at the same time, which, again, I tried to address, which was removed off my legislation. A lot of people claim that if we start doing that, we can't get members. But then again, there is the sense of impropriety and a simple conflict of interest. Do you know that we have board members sitting in associations that don't even live in the community, don't even have a vested interest, and in their dockets, the bylaws, it clearly states that they're not supposed to serve there unless they're a unit owner or renter or whatever, and these laws are being broken all over. So I thank you for calling in.
And we have attorneys that are part of the corruption that represent the association. How much can we fight? There is no place for us to go.
Well, Mr. Poilakoff wants to make a comment.
Joseph, thanks, Ellen. I have to let you go. If I may, I'd hate for this hour to fly by without having an opportunity to point out three very important changes in the law that Representative Rabana helped put through that are extremely important to common ownership housing in the state. First, we have made a change for what is known to the Market Records Title Act, which by operation of its provisions has extinguished the underlying covenants at a number of homeowner communities across the state. And what this does
Could you put that in more simple English?
Yeah, what that basically means is because of operation of a title law, there are a number of very large communities in the state that no longer have the ability to regulate the community to enforce its covenants and restrictions, its architectural controls, the levy assessments, which is essential to the viability of community. And there has been a law now passed that will allow for the reinstatement of those extinguished covenants. Another important change in the law is to protect those residents of condominiums, cooperative, and homeowner associations by saying that if an association has a defibrillator, the insurance company cannot require it as a condition of keeping that defibrillator to maintain a medical malpractice insurance. And it also grants immunity to the association as long as it keeps the equipment in good operating condition. So hopefully this provision will save some lives.
Well, that seems like kind of small potatoes when the gripes that these people are saying to us today.
That's correct, Joseph, and that's where my gripe is. I wanted sweeping reforms. I wanted some change. I wanted something to really be the meat and potatoes of the changes. But what we got this year, and remember, I will consider that some form of a victory this year, because I said I got my foot in the door, but there's so much more that needs to be done.
Well, and my point is, I think if you read the laws that are on the books, if you enforce those laws, if you educate the owners as to their rights, you will find that much of the abuses are addressed in the current laws.
Well, I certainly want to thank you, State Representative Julio Robina of Miami, and also Gary Polyakov, who specializes in condo board and homeowner associations. Thank you very much, gentlemen. And that wraps up today's edition of Topical Currents. Technical supervision by Michael Stock. Associate producer Richard Ives handle our calls. My apologies to the many callers I wasn't able to get to. Our address is info@wlrn.org. That's info@wlrn.org. Telephone area code 305-995-2258. CDs and audio cassettes are available. Tomorrow's